guys. What's up?
Yeah, there's a person in the damn comment section called the Unmasked Phantom of the Opera with hair.
I know, that's it. As soon as I saw that, I laughed my ass off.
I love fucked up screen names. I'll watch another show, and a regular commenter is a dude named Crackalactica.
Crackalactica. That's pretty awesome.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. All right. So, excuse me. Goodness. Yeah. So, what is it? It's Tuesday today, right?
Yeah. Let me turn this down.
We actually ended up not doing a food show this week, but that's okay. We'll do another one next
week. Yeah, I don't want to talk about food right now.
When we think of something else. Well, and like I said,
we were behind on movies.
We were, yeah. And actually, Dermot Hennessy, who's in the comments sometime, I don't know if he's in there right now, he actually sent me, I mentioned Brimstone and Treacle, and he sent me the money for Brimstone and Treacle and also Vincent Price's Theater of Blood, which we will be reviewing at some point also.
Yeah, we don't do these in order that you guys sent it to them. We do them in the order that we feel like doing.
That we feel like watching them.
So it gets kind of fucked up, you know what I mean? We got a big stack we got to get to. We'll get to them eventually.
Well, yeah. I mean, ever since we started doing the older ones on the matinee, that makes it a lot easier because, you know, then we don't have to wait, like, because the movie retrospectives were just once a week, you know.
This movie here is a good one. Forgotten classic. It's called Brimstone and Treacle, which, you know, and it's a very mysterious movie. It's fun to watch, and we're going to get into it. It stars Sting.
Yeah.
And he does a fucking great job in it. Sting can act. Makes you want to see his version of Frankenstein now.
I haven't seen The Bride in a really long time, but as I said, I was watching In Search of Darkness, that horror documentary, and they were talking about it on there, and it made me like all nostalgic because I saw The Bride probably like 50 bajillion times when I was a kid. Yeah. It's like, I don't know if it still holds up, but I remember really liking it back then. Yeah, yeah, yeah. So I think this was the second movie that Sting had done after Quadrophenia. And in Quadrophenia, he wasn't like really the main character. He was kind of a side character. Yeah. So he's kind of like the main character in this one. So the story behind this one, you know, okay. So you know what's funny about this? So this is, this was written by Dennis Potter, you know, a really well-known British writer. Now, prior to even hearing of Brimstone and Treacle, I had actually read The Singing Detective. I think my ex-husband gave it to me, actually. I saw the movie adaptation. I think Robert Downey Jr. was in it. It was all right. It wasn't that great. The book was much better. I had seen Pennies from Heaven, which, again, is a pretty decent adaptation. But the weird thing about this is that I hadn't seen this one. And then, do you remember, like, many years ago, you just, like, woke up one morning randomly, and you said, for some reason, I was just thinking of this movie that I saw a long time ago. And you kind of described it, and I was kind of like, man, that doesn't sound familiar. And then you were like, oh, Sting was in it. Yeah. So then we did a Google search, and we found it.
Yeah.
And then we were able to like find it and watch it. And I was like, how the fuck did I never see this movie?
Yeah, I saw it. I saw it sometimes when I was in the Army.
Yeah.
But I didn't, or when I got out of the Army, I don't remember. Around that time.
Yeah.
And it tripped me. That was when I got out. Eric Grock showed this to me.
Oh, okay.
He was into like movies from this era.
Yeah.
And music from that era.
Yeah.
And he pulled this one out and I watched it. And it was a trip. It's about this dude with a mysterious origin. He's played by Sting, a young guy. He comes out of a church and he just starts randomly approaching dudes. Oh, I know you. You know, pretend like he knows him. And he tries to talk his way back into this dude's life, talk his way into his house and take all his shit from him. That's what it seems like. But as the story unfolds, there's like more to it. He's some kind of a supernatural creature. He must be a demon. But then as it goes on, is he a demon or is he an angel? Because he seems to be doing good things and bad things at the same time to serve an ultimate good, but he's bad. It's a weird
like he does
mixture.
Bad things, but it turns out good.
Right.
Which is like really, really kind of fucked up. Which I think, okay, so the history of this, so Dennis Potter initially wrote this as a teleplay for BBC. They were going to show, and this was back in 1976, and they were going to show it on the show that they had back then, Play for Today. So they were going to do it like, you know, a stage play, but like on TV. So they produced it, and the BBC were like, yeah, no, I don't think we can show that. Because from everything I've heard, I haven't seen the BBC version, even though like Mango said it was better. The BBC version is a little more extreme. And I think that the BBC version, and please correct me if I'm wrong, because Mega said that he had seen it. I think it's less ambiguous in the BBC version that Martin Taylor, the character played by Sting in the movie, is the devil.
Yeah.
I think in the stage play, he even has like hooves and shit like that, like cloven hooves. I think that's what I heard.
He might just be a demon then.
Yeah.
Not really the devil per se.
Yeah. It's almost kind of like he almost comes across as like a trickster god a little bit. So
the way I interpreted it, demons are angels. They're just fallen angels.
Yeah.
The difference between a demon and an angel is very subtle. And when you watch the movie, you kind of see that. Demonic things are happening, but kind of so are angelic things. He's doing good things, but he's bad.
Yeah.
And then he does some bad things, and good comes from it. It's weird.
Was kind of controversial. I think most of the controversy arose, at least from what I could determine, because they thought that, I think their main problem was that they thought that religious people would be offended. You know, this was back in the 70s.
Yeah, the theme is faith.
Pretty much. So, yeah. And the thing about it, too, is it's almost kind of like something that I got from it, because I've seen this a couple of times, and then we just, like, watched it again, like, last night. Another thing I got from it, too, was that the two characters, like the husband and wife, who in the movie are named Tom and Norma. I think her name is Amy in the stage play, but it doesn't really matter. She's the same character otherwise. And her being sort of like, not simple-minded necessarily, but she's a very simple woman. She, you know, she has very strong faith. She's a very positive. She believes in miracles. She believes in the good of people. Whereas her husband, Tom, is just like this bitter, old, you know, kind of cranky shithead. And, you know, he's lost his faith because of what happened with the daughter, which, like I said, we'll get into the plot in a minute. But so it's almost kind of like they're seeing the world the way that they are. Like, they're projecting whatever their shit is onto the world at large, because she is a good person. So she sees the world as a good place.
And she sees this guy as a good guy.
And she sees this guy as a good guy, even though he's doing bad things. And
but he is helping her.
And he's taking advantage of her. But it does actually end up helping her in the end.
Yeah. And he does do her work for her.
Yeah.
He did fix her marriage in a way.
Or at least got her to realize, exposed it so she could kick his stupid ass out.
Right.
But it's just like, I think the problem, what most people would probably find more shocking nowadays than the religious stuff is the fact, okay, so let's talk about the plot a little bit. So in the movie version, Sting, like you said, he plays this character named Martin Taylor. Now, he comes out of a church at the beginning, and he starts, like, approaching dudes in the street, like, pretending like he knows them, like I said. So he's like a con man, and he's trying to, like, con his way into people's lives.
Yeah, and hold on.
What's that?
During the opening credits, it shows a bunch of messages and words, the titles and the you know what I mean? Like, with the opening titles or the opening credits comes out of the mouth of a photograph of a gargoyle.
Yeah.
So I was kind of interpreting it. And then it shows him walking out of the doors of a church. I was kind of interpreting it as that he had come from the mouth of a gargoyle. But he had also come from a church. So it's ambiguous. He came from the mouth of good, or he came from the mouth of evil.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Well, that's what's so fascinating
about
this, is that morality isn't black and white. It's like, yes, he did terrible things, like objectively terrible things, but the result of them was not necessarily bad.
No, he even saves the daughter,
who's
got a head injury and been in a vegetative state, basically.
Yeah.
Basically vegetative.
So that's what ends up happening, is that he... So he's been trying to do this with, you know, with dudes in the street. So he finally gets this guy named Tom Bates, and he is able to sort of wangle his way into, like, I think Tom, like, tries to escape him, but he steals his wallet so he knows where he lives. So he turns up back at his house like, hey, man, you lost your wallet. You know what I mean?
Yeah, he steals the money, too.
Yeah, he did steal the money, but even though he says somebody else did it.
Yeah.
But so he's in there, and he begins to ingratiate himself into the household by saying that he was the
boyfriend
of their daughter, Patricia.
Yeah.
Now, 3 years previously, Patricia had been hit by a truck.
Yeah. Right.
And she's still alive, but she's, you know,
like a vegetable.
Yeah, she's not in a coma. She can still like make noises and move around and stuff, but it's like she's not, they're not really sure, like
she's like infantile.
Yeah, they're not really sure like what's going on in there. She can't talk anymore. And there's like so Tom and Norma kind of have these terrible like fights about Norma is convinced that she'll get better someday, that she can understand what Norma is saying to her. And Tom is just like, you know, she's gone. There's nothing. I don't know why you're being so silly and so stupid. There's no God. There's no anything. And it's like,
yeah, his job is to write these eulogies. See, he appears very religious, but he doesn't believe in any of it.
Yeah.
And he doesn't believe in any of it because he thinks if there is a God, it's indifferent or it's kind of cruel. He lost his faith. It turns out later he's also a pervy motherfucker too. He doesn't appear to be, but he's a fucking pervy motherfucker. He appears to be kind of real uptight and conservative, but nah, he's a hoe.
Well, yeah, he's because not only is he banging his secretary, he also, there's a scene of him too, like where he thinks about stopping to pick up a young teenage girl.
She was trying to,
get in the car
out of the rain. It was raining.
Yeah, and then he sped up again and was like, dirty slut, or something like that.
And it turns out he was digging through the daughter's fucking underwear.
His daughter's underwear.
Looking at the bra. He's not just being her father.
Yeah, and I'm just like,
yeah, he's a hell.
No, that's not how that works. So yeah, like that's kind of, so that kind of comes out through Martin being there. Because obviously, you know, Tom being a cranky old dude, he doesn't want all his secrets sort of, exposed, I guess.
Yeah.
So he really does not want this individual here. However, Martin Taylor is very, very good at ingratiating himself with Norma because Norma has not been able to leave the house since Patricia has been in the house. So she has not left the house in 3 years because she, you know, she's her full-time caretaker.
Yes. He starts buttering her up, calling her mom and shit. Fucking
Mumsy.
Mumsy. Yeah. Of course, Stings, he's in this movie, he's fucking young and he's very charming and good looking. He kind of comes across as like, what's that other actor?
It's Malcolm McDowell. In A Clockwork Orange.
Yeah, kind of actually a little bit better looking than Malcolm McDowell.
He reminded me very much of that.
Yeah, but he reminds me of fucking crazy ass Malcolm McDowell. And fucking Norma, it's probably about Jenny's age actually, but with the hair and the clothes and just the style of England in the fucking 80s, it was like something out of the 50s.
She looks like a frumpy
one. She looks like she's in her 70s or 60s, but nah, she's probably like in her late 40s. And he's just buttering her up, and she's attracted to him. You can tell, but she's such a good person. She doesn't realize this attraction, I don't think. She tries to keep it, I guess. She tries to keep it.
Well, he like, appeals
clean,
to.
And he's like trying to come at her through a motherly type thing.
He appeals to her through her vanity. Appeals to her because her husband doesn't understand her, doesn't understand how much work she has to do all day. I mean, her job is 24/7 taking care of this girl.
Yeah. So he starts doing all the chores.
Yeah, so he starts cooking and cleaning and all this other stuff. However, he also starts molesting the girl.
The girl. Yeah, she's hot. Just because she's paralyzed, you know, whatever, she's fucked up. She's still hot.
And she can't.
She's real good looking and her body is fucking intact. She's just like that. And it's funny, you know what I mean? You don't know, it's ambiguous. It's kind of like molestation.
Oh, it definitely is molestation. Yeah. Because
but
she
weird
can't
things
talk,
start to come from it.
That's what I mean. I think that's the most controversial thing about it.
Is it some kind of therapy or what? Because eventually, as the movie unfolds, you're like, man, what the hell's going on here? This is some kind of supernatural thing, you know? He also starts weaseling his way in between the married couple, and eventually he overcomes the husband by going straight for his stomach because the motherfucker can cook.
Yeah.
So and she couldn't cook too well, evidently. He was complaining about her cooking. Well, he's making beef bourguignon and fucking.
Well, I guess she didn't really have a lot of time to cook because she was like taking care of the daughter all the time.
Yeah, well, he was doing all of it. Yeah, I guess it was two of them. It was a little bit less load, but he was making these dinners and shit, so the dude was like, yeah, okay, I guess you can stay here. And
that was all he cared about.
He's like, yeah, I guess you can stay. And I don't know how much more you want to talk about fucking how it turns out. What would be the next thing after that?
Well, the next thing after that, you find out later on, actually, you find out kind of early on in the movie
what happened, right?
That the dad, Tom, yeah, is actually sort of indirectly responsible for the truck hitting the daughter.
Got it.
Because the daughter, like, turned up at his work one day, like, to tell him something. She goes into his office and finds him, like, banging
the secretary. Secretary was riding his ass.
Yeah, he was, like, on the floor.
And the secretary turned around and looked at her watching, and she said, how could you? And with that woman, like, there's something wrong with that woman. She's just a normal woman. But it's funny, they were kind of showing, he was dreaming about it, too. And in his dreams, not only was he banging that secretary, who she looked like a battle axe, actually.
She did, actually, yeah.
Not only was he, that was another one that was probably our age, but looked 20 years older. Yeah, well. She looked like a damn battle axe, the way she was dressed and everything, too, you know. And he was hitting it. She was riding him. But in his mind, they were showing what he was seeing. He was imagining she was like about 20. That was the way he saw her. Remember that?
I think that's the implication was that he wanted to bang his daughter. So I think
that wasn't his daughter, though.
No. I'm just saying that he was kind of picturing someone that was like his daughter's age.
Yeah. But she was about 20, right? No, she was.
Well, the daughter, you know, she had been.
She's in her late teens.
Late teens, early 20s. Because he said something about art college.
Yeah.
So I guess she had just been out of high school. So, you know, it's in the UK. It's,
yeah. Well, as a guy, you know what I mean? I don't really vilify it that much. I mean, you know, fucking most guys actually kind of fucking are attracted to fucking women in their prime, which is 20s. You know what I mean? That's like the pinnacle of it. Although, you know, some guys expand their tastes out, you know, fucking to a lot of different things than that. But just the standard dude is kind of frozen in that era, you know what I mean?
But the whole implication, the scene where he was tawing through his daughter's underwear drawer would seem to imply that he kind of wanted, or you know, that he seemed to imply that he kind of wanted.
Martin,
because he was a perk.
Martin knew about it somehow.
Yeah,
all right.
Well, because he's a demon.
He used that to fucking cudgel him into fucking submission.
Yeah,
remember?
Yeah.
Whether he said, I was just being her father. Yeah, I don't fucking know. I wouldn't do that. I don't have any daughters.
That's weird.
That sounds a little strange.
It's a lot strange.
So I don't fucking know exactly
what that was. It's fucking creepy.
Right. I think they probably, if they wanted it to be the daughter, imply the daughter, then they would have used the same actress. It was a different girl.
Well, but you know, like I said, I think it was kind of like sublimated because, like I said, the girl that he almost picked up when she was hitchhiking kind of looked like his daughter as well.
Maybe.
And then he just called her a dirty whore or whatever. He said, dirty slut or whatever he said.
Yeah. Most fucking, your average motherfucker, though, is that's the way he thinks.
And remember, like, when the secretary, like, comes in his office and he tells her to, like, lift her skirt up and then says something like, you're a salacious, salacious Jezebel, something like that.
Yeah, and then he goes, thank you.
he was aware of that.
Yeah. He was a perv.
Yeah.
He was a fucking perv.
Yeah.
And that's how the devil got him. He was a perv.
Yeah, because the devil knew what he was up to.
So the daughter saw him fucking banging the secretary. She wasn't really a secretary. She was a co-worker.
I guess it's not really made clear. It doesn't really matter.
That was
his workplace. So
yeah.
I just assumed.
And she fucking, with that woman, and she goes running, screaming out, and he's chasing her. Hold on. She runs out the street and gets hit by the truck.
Yeah.
Well, she was never able to speak after that, so the wife never found out about it. So he kind of didn't want her to fucking regain consciousness.
See, I think that was the implication too. That might have been not only was he guilty about being indirectly responsible for her getting hit by a truck.
He didn't want to be ratted out.
But also he didn't want to be ratted out. Yeah. So he was kind of hoping that she wouldn't ever like come back to.
It's funny, you know what I mean? Because fucking we come from a background, you know, of fucking crazy ass goths of fetish couples that do fucking weird shit and everything, you know? And What this dude was about, besides pawing through his fucking daughter's fucking drawers, what the dude was about wasn't really a big deal. Wasn't that unusual? What was unusual about him is that he had repressed it and somehow turned it into some kind of a Madonna whore complex.
Yeah, that's exactly.
He wasn't real honest with himself about who he was.
Yeah.
He definitely wasn't honest with other people.
And he was just like turning into like a rage monster.
Yeah.
He was just angry. He hated everybody.
Yeah.
I think like in the
he lost all hope for
in
future,
the BBC play, they actually made him a lot worse. He was like, I think he was like in the National Front or something. You know what I mean? So they made him like a lot more of an asshole. He's an asshole in this one too, but not as much as I think they softened him a little bit. Although he does, that's the thing about this. Every character in this is complicated.
Yeah.
Like, he's a dick, but the more you find out, the more you know that why he's like that.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
He's got sexual problems.
Yeah. Like some other people we can talk about.
He has sexual problems.
But yeah, exactly. Yeah. Well, yeah, he's got problems. And, you know, and his wife, even though she's a lovely person, but she's not perfect either. She's still able to, she basically leaves her daughter in the care of Martin just because she wants to get her hair done. Yeah. She's like the other extreme. She's like so trusting because he's able to, you know, you work so hard and you haven't left this house in 3 years, which was true.
She was also kind of weak-willed.
Yeah, that too.
He easily pushed her around.
And she was very, very religious, and he used that to kind of get through the chinks in her armor as well, because like he, you know, he's the devil or a demon or whatever.
There's this one scene where she asks Martin to pray over the daughter to make her get better, and he's like, oh, okay. So, you know, so he goes through this big fucking like prayer, and he starts saying this fucking magnificent prayer, and the fucking thunder and the lightning's fucking going on, and he's talking to the Lord and fucking, you know, on behalf of this child, and the storm is happening in there, and she's just in awe, you know, wow, you know. And then they show outside, and it's fucking,
yeah, there's nothing.
There's nothing. The storm is only inside. And then when it's over, nothing happens. I guess. Eventually, what would be a good way to fucking, I don't know if we should spoil it.
Well, we already kind of did.
Kind of did. Eventually, I don't remember how, some fight broke out between the husband and the wife, and when that was good, he caused it, and I don't remember exactly what he did. And then he crept into the daughter's room, and he starts straight on just fucking climbing on top of that chick and get ready to bang her. Oh, another thing that's weird is that during him praying over her, she was freaking out.
Yeah,
and it looked like something out of The Exorcist. But then they showed the internal world, what that girl was thinking. What she was thinking inside of her mind. And she saw herself in the nightclub dancing with cute guys. Center of attention.
Yeah.
She was actually in a heavenly realm. It looked like she was suffering, but she was...
ambiguous as to whether... Because I think there's even a scene early on where when Martin comes there and she starts reacting in a particular way.
Yeah.
And the wife says... You know, she's happy that he's here. And then the husband says, no, she's warning us about him.
You can't tell.
And you can't tell because she can't talk.
The only time that they ever showed her internal world, she was partying.
Yeah.
She's kind of like in a heavenly realm. And eventually, while they're fighting, he jumps on top of her and starts fucking cracking her. And she fucking comes awake fucking and starts screaming. The parents run in. They find him trying to get out of the room because he was fucking raping her.
He
jumped out the window. And then she fucking wakes up and goes, Daddy, how could you with that woman?
Yeah, which was the last thing that she remembered.
Yeah, yeah. So
rape cured her.
Yeah. Well, here's the thing. It's ambiguous. You interpreted it as rape.
Well, it is, but the thing that's ambiguous about it is...
Whether or not he knew that would do it.
Yeah, you're not really sure. Yeah, you're not really sure what his end game is, if he even has one. Does he just fuck with... Oh, we lost it.
No, it's gone.
Is it? Okay, well, I lost it.
Looks like it's still going here.
All right.
You couldn't tell it was ambiguous.
Yeah.
You don't know if it was a devil that had raped her or if it was an angel that did some kind of therapy that looked like rape that brought her back. You don't know. It was all fucking... ambiguous. It's still going here.
Yeah, mine's not.
Can you guys still hear us? Because our the image on one,
it looks like they can.
Frozen.
Yeah, my shit froze.
Yeah.
I thought it was gonna go because my chat stopped a long time ago.
Yeah, it did.
Yeah.
No, it's still going. They're all saying we're good.
Yeah, my chat stopped a long time ago.
It's a good it, and then there's more to it after that, but it's a good movie, and it's kind of like a stage play. It's got really good acting. The set's good, and it's got great fucking music because Sting and the Police did all the incidental music and stuff in the back of it. So you can hear a lot of, like, the Police. Andy Summers playing guitar and stuff. It was good. That's back.
Had a Go-Go song in it, too.
Yeah, had a Go-Go song in
it. Got the beat. Because it was 82, 83 this year? 82, I think it was.
I think you can see it for free, can't you?
Well, I bought the Blu-ray,
We bought the Blu-ray, but I wonder if Amazon Prime has it.
I don't know. It might. I will say that the stage play...
Still going.
The stage play, you know, like I said, they made it in 1976, and they didn't actually show it until 1987.
Yeah.
But I would actually like to see that at some point, because I've heard that it was better, you know.
Now, Jenny's laptop is starting to glitch out. I still see that everything's streaming good on my tablet, but we should shut this down now, because I think the fucking stream is going to fucking...
It probably
gonna
will.
End at any moment. But I recommend a movie. I give it a fucking 5 stars. It's a classic. It's a masterpiece of what it is.
Like you said, it's a small cast. It's, you know, it's very much like a stage play because that's what it was written as.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's like, it's really, really good. And I feel like a lot of people haven't seen it, maybe.
Very ambiguous, and you could look at things in a couple different ways. Was this a natural occurrence? Was it supernatural? Was it good? Was it evil? It's just, everything is very clouded, you know?
Yeah.
And you're not sure exactly what you saw. Like, it looked like he was raping her, but the angle and everything, it didn't quite, he was going, be quiet, you bitch, and shit like that, you know, he was saying that, but it revived her. And here's the thing, you see, one of the fucking Bible stories of Elijah, it was either Elisha or Elijah, laid on top of a boy to bring him back to life.
Yeah, that's his story. So,
well, that was Old Testament, and none of that happened.
Yeah,
it was all mythology. It was all stories. He laid on top of him, and he came alive. You know? Did he lay hands on him, or did he lay on top of him? It's unclear. It's just the way it was written.
And like I said, they leave it
like that too. And
they leave
movie.
It ambiguous as to what Sting's, you know, what his intention was.
Yeah.
I mean, you're led to believe that he's a demon, but like you said, he could be a fallen angel as well. It's a very complicated, the morality in this is very complicated.
Yeah. Are you making it dirty because that's the way you wanted to see it? You don't know.
Right.
Yeah. And yeah. I think that's what they were trying to do.
Yeah.
They definitely were trying to fuck with your point of view and your morality.
Yeah.
You don't know if you are a trusted observer in this.
Yeah.
Because the other two aren't.
Yeah, that's true.
You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, nobody is all good or all bad. I think that's kind of like what they're
That's how at. I interpreted it on an artistic level.
Yeah. But yeah, totally, everybody should see this. It's really good. Like I said, I think my shit's going to crash.
It probably will.
We are going to cut it short. We've already been going 33 minutes anyway.
Yeah.
So remember, come by tomorrow, because tomorrow's Wednesday at 5 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Mm. We're going to do our sidetrack show. We're going to have a drink and talk about what the hell ever. We don't even know. We'll find out same time you guys do. All right. So thanks, everybody, for dropping by. We will see you guys again tomorrow evening. See you then.